Thank you. Okay, so I will start from this blackboard. I'll talk about, okay, let me give you some reference work I did in collaboration with many people, including Victor Flaumbaum. And so it's like the reference are these, but I mean, you can just look maybe on the. Very useful. 0, 2, 8, 1, 7. Okay, so I'll do that. Okay, so the goal, maybe that was not a good way of using a blackboard, but in any case, the goal is to try to constrain spin-independent forces between atomic constituents, electrons, protons, and neutrons. Neutrons are actually very, very important, using atomic spectroscopy. We have like a bunch of new measurements, like the precision is becoming every day like better. So the question is just, can we use that to probe a fit force? And so, it's a blob now, okay. So I will try to constrain a new Yukawa potential where A and B are electrons, protons, and neutrons. So this gives rise to a contribution to the energy levels of an atom, and so gives rise to a contribution to the frequency shift. Since we measure them very well, the idea is how do we look for that? And the precision, the experimental precision now has reached like level of like 10 to the minus 18, like for ytterbium and other heavy atoms, like with these atomic clocks. Of course, I mean, they still trying to find like a potential which in a sense looks a lot like QED is not a trivial task. And I will be discussing two ways. One, the idea is just using the theoretical precision that it's available, and it's quite good for few electrons atoms. So theoretical, I mean, theory prediction for few electrons atoms. And the other way would be instead to come up with a clean observable with like heavy atoms, clean observable for many electrons atoms. And in both cases, the key ingredient will be looking at isotope shift, so combining the measurements, such as at the end we will just look at the coupling of electrons and neutrons. So when I think about now, what is the force which gives me this spin-independent potential is not a dark photon, so you can think about B minus L, the X portal, so the neutron coupling will be very important. At the end I have a slide to show something which can be told for the dark photon, but this is not the main, it's not my benchmark model. And actually I will never like, I will just be agnostic and talk about electron-neutron coupling, and also just like also when I will show the sensitivity we can get, I will look only at the same type of probe. Okay. Is my writing... okay. Okay, let me start with like few electron atoms. And I will be talking mainly about hydrogen, deuterium, and helium. Actually, I mean, the situation for other atoms like lithium and beryllium is also very interesting. Like, I mean, the computations are quite good. The reason why I will not be discussing that is that we don't gain so much, and the computation also to calculate the new phase contribution becomes like increasingly involved the more electrons you consider. So first of all, I just want to briefly introduce why isotope shift. So let's consider, I mean, what now I have in mind is that I have this Yukawa potential, and I want to consider a certain transition I, where like it's an optical transition. For instance, I can think about the 1s, 2s transition in hydrogen, which is measured with like 10 to the minus 15 relative precision. And how do I try to find out the existence of a new fit force? So now my theoretical, what I call theoretical frequency, which is not really a theoretical frequency, it depends on the alpha, it depends on the mass of the electron, it depends on the mass of the proton, and also on the charge radius. And also, disclaimer, I'm going to ignore the charge radius puzzle. I mean, the charge radius, I'm talking about a method to set a bound. Now, of course, like the measurements, they might be fishy, there could be some problem. Actually, when I talk about isotope, I don't even have to worry about the proton charge radius puzzle, because there is no discrepancy when you look at the isotope shift proton deuterium. But in any case, there is this elephant in the room, but the elephant in the room will just change the bounds, will not change the anything like substantial of what I'm saying. Okay, so the charge radius, the proton charge radius will be floating around. And okay, so the way it's convenient to think about this new theory is like the frequency for a point like nucleus plus the finite size. And this is precisely the part which is proportional to the charge radius of the proton or the nucleus. And this is instead depends only on the mass of the nucleus and on alpha and the mass of the electron. Okay, so the problem is that when you consider the absolute frequency, even the point-like frequency is typically at the theoretical uncertainty, which is worse than the experimental one. The fact that this is not an easy quantity to measure and then to predict is like easy to guess. But actually, the absolute frequency tend to have like a theoretical error, even on the point like, much bigger. And this is due, for instance, in this case, by the fact that there is uncertainty in the Rydberg, which is like bigger than the uncertainty in your like 1s, 2s measurement, because you have to have an external measurement of the Rydberg. And this brings, it makes not so effective to consider the absolute frequency. And then moreover, when you go to few electrons atoms, you have like a mess to consider. Even like an indium, you have like the repulsion between the electrons. So it's better to do the isotope shift, which means taking, if I write here, it's okay. You take two isotope, so same number of protons, different number of neutrons, and you say, okay, let me consider the same transition I, and let me take the isotope shift, which is defined as the difference of the two frequencies, the one for the isotope A and the one for the isotope A prime. And this, really simplify your life quite a bit, because the leading order contribution cancels out, and so part of the problem of having to like all basically the uncertainty in the point like part goes beyond experimental precision, which does not change significantly when you do absolute frequency or isotope shift. So in a sense, you can not consider the uncertainty for that, and you're left just with one beast to fight, which is the field shift, which is like the finite size of the nucleus. Okay, let me see if I'm following my... Also, just to give an idea, when I'm talking about like this frequency, the absolute one, I'm talking about a ballpark of 10 to the 15 Hertz. A frequency shift is always like mega up to gigahertz.
This is a very naive question, but the, I mean, in the presence of Yukawa forces in this form, does it also lead to changes in the extracted values of parameters that go into the point line frequency prediction? In other words, I can tell obviously you make a direct measurement, there's a radius dependent piece that you're sensitive to directly, but are you also indirectly sensitive to this because there are, you know, what you call Rydberg and other things get changed in the presence of these Yukawa forces?
Yes, I mean, like, you have to choose, like, these inputs to be individual, like, you should choose new physics-free input parameters like that.
Okay. So, there's a choice of parameters such that you're insensitive to this new data?
Yes, I mean, in a sense, okay, in the back of my mind, I'm always consider, like, that these Yukawas are, like, small enough that I'm, like, free to consider these as the new physics-free parameters. Yeah, I should have specified it.
Maybe you said it, but how big is the difference between the isotopes compared to the radius?
It's like, respect to, what do you
mean? To the radius.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, for like heavy electron atoms, most of the isotope shift is like the field that is given by the...
But for these few electrons?
It's typically... I think 100 kilohertz level or something like that. So it's like you go from like 10 to the 15 is the absolute frequency, then the isotope shift is gigahertz, and then you have like maybe another 10 to the minus 3 for suppression in the...
Oh, for the radius.
Yes, but instead the situation is reversed when you consider the electrons atoms.
Okay.
But still, I mean, when you do this, at the end, the bottleneck is really the precision of the charge radius. So here I want to show the constraints, but instead I will show everything at the end. I will keep,
Sorry, when you run a V theory, do you include this the Yukawa term or just the schematic?
No, this is like just the QED. Okay. Yes. And then I mean, what? Okay.
So why don't you look at the P levels, then they don't overlap with the nucleus so much.
Yes, this is true, but indeed, I mean, but also sometimes, like, the new physics contribution is less, smaller, and because, I mean, for short range, I also like the, in a sense, I'm really looking at something which is the same effect of the field shift and delta V Dirac.
So what N5 do you like?
I mean, I'm just whatever I can get, in a sense. Like, I probe everything which goes from, like, massless to, of course, at some point. I mean, at some point, my sensitivity stops to be meaningful because the effect which I'm sensitive to is so big that it will perturb everything I'm using.
I guess two questions. One, why is the isotope shift, why can it get from 10 to the 15 to 10 to the 6, I would imagine, to just...
Because all the leading order terms don't depend on the... I mean, they don't depend on neither the mass of the nucleus, neither on the size of the nucleus.
So there's some sort of reduced mass type effect.
Yes, but I mean, even a leading order is like, for instance, for the 1s1s is Rydberg. So the, and then you have next to leading order correction that they cancel out, like they don't cancel out and give you the isotope shift.
And what is the width of those typical lines? Because, I mean, those transitions are not super narrow, right? Are they?
No, it depends. I mean, it's like this. This I don't remember, but I mean, I don't know, hundreds of nanometers and stuff like
that. Depends what system. You didn't tell what system you're considering.
One yeah, because I'm not yet.
One is spurious or.
I mean, now I'm considering, like, this. There is nothing, like, so much dependent on the system. Like, what depends on the system and how good my bound will be. I mean, if I'm choosing something that is measured with a terrible precision, I can still do the same game, but it's just that it will not be the best bound. So, or what, like, choosing the system, choosing the transition depends only on, in a sense, you can consider all of the best transition, the best calculation, and just see what is the best system, and it's like a little bit a question of like maximize new physics and minimize the contribution of the field shift. So still, Sean, with respect to considering like just state with like P transition is still better to consider like 2s to p or maybe 2s to d, things like that. Because the precision there is also significantly better in physics is a leading order effect. Okay, so.
Because the scheme is completely different. 1s, 2s, direct calculation. But if you go, you need to consider King's plot because this scheme.
Yeah, but I'm talking about. I'm not talking
because
about.
People might be confused. This method does not work, which you describe now.
So I, if you say, I said Tivoli and Kleenex.
More sophisticated.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I'm going from, like, in a sense, historically, it's not even how it happened. But yes. If you have to choose, I mean, before going to Iterbio, maybe you say, what can I do with the hydrogen, right? I disagree, actually. It's not true that you cannot do anything with hydrogen.
Because it was considered before, it doesn't work.
Oh, I consider it too, and it works. I have a clock. So then, I mean, you consider for spin-dependent forces. So I'm talking always about spin-independent forces. And actually, for helium, so I will have a plot.
If you'd like to show it now.
Okay. Yeah, but they said that it's better not. But I mean, we can try.
You should do it.
But maybe I should have first tell you a little bit the options. I don't know, but you understood how. But then the options are that you need this field shift, so you need a charge radius. And the option you have are like, is scattering, which is very new physics free. Then you can combine several measurements. So you take two measurements of isotope shift, and you solve for new physics and for the charge radius. And you get something that it doesn't depend on any charge radius parameter, but unfortunately, as like, it's not very sensitive to short-range interaction, because, I mean, short-range interactions are not distinguishable from the nuclear effect. Or you consider muonic spectroscopy. So you consider, for instance, the charge radius, the difference between the charge radius of protons and deuterium from CREMA, which is an experiment which is looking at muonic atoms. And this is actually a very good measurement, it's the most precise measurement we have of this difference of the charge radius, and it's free of tension at the moment. But in any case, again, when this solution, this tension will be solved, my bounds will be shifting. It's not the end of the world. So in the plot, now I can show the plot.
Maybe I can ask you a question. Claudia, so the first method, electron scattering, that's going to be totally useless, I think, to resolve this.
What do you mean? To resolve what?
To disentangle the finite radius effect. I mean, for the same reason that it's still an issue for the proton radius in muonic hydrogen.
But I mean, I'm using these as an input, right?
Yeah, I know, but, okay, so one of the issues is how do you extrapolate for, in terms of in Q squared, from where it's measured in electron scattering down to zero, effectively. That's one of the uncertainties, I think, when people try to figure out exactly what inputs to take to figure out the proton radius and see if there's actually a problem or not.
Yeah, but I mean, this is all a question of like, you know, if it's really the same observable and things like that. But I mean, people used also in spectroscopy the charge radius of the proton extracted from like scattering is just like precise at 1%. But then I mean, at the end of the day, like, so I mean, what you want to is like to minimize the uncertainty. So then, for instance, if I have a 1% uncertainty in the charge radius of the proton, and my field shift is like a 100 kilohertz effect, I will have that new physics contribution should be bounded by 1 kilohertz. So it will just affect how good my bound is going to be. For instance, here, which is the plane of Y electron, Y neutron, as a function of the mediator mass in MeV. This bound, so you should ignore the first and the last one, because they something that I will describe later. But so these curves are, this is like actually the, these two are basically the same transition for helium, but with like e scattering and muonic measurements. These are projections because the Kramer experiment didn't release yet the actual data for like the charge radius like of helium 3 and 4. So this is exactly the same idea, but just using as an input the charge radius measured in two different experiments. So here with the e scattering, I'm sensing, like, I mean, depends what you consider to be a good result. But I can constrain somehow my interaction also with the more limited precision of the scattering. This is actually what I can do with the 1s, 2s hydrogen deuterium isotope shift with the scattering, and this with the mnemonic atom. So it's always like, I mean, what you really need is the best way to independently measure the charge radius of the your nucleus. But I will come back to this plot because then this is our guy, Terbium Plus, is not here. So I mean, this is like, surprisingly, is still a way to constrain with like a decent precision the existence of these new forces, and is all due by the fact that you are considering isotope shift. So at the end, like, in a sense, your background dies a lot more than actually your physics does. It's the only bottom line. And these, I mean, the present constraints of this blob of various color, these are the fit force experiments. These are like globular cluster bounds on YU and YN. So of course, astrophysics in the moments which kicks in does not leave any room for atomic physics to say anything. These yellow region are like all bounds of neutron scattering experiments, which bounds that were worked out 30 years ago, and people like, I don't know, I know that many people feel uncomfortable with that. So still, this is, for instance, in this region, they are the only probe of YUYN. Of course, I mean, here, especially when you look in the few MeV region, you are going to have pin dump experiments and all of sort of like the usual player. But in a sense, this is like an indirect probe. So it's like, for instance, so the comparison should be with G-2, with like, I don't know, also neutrino scattering experiments for for Binon cell. So this is, so you actually probe a new regional parameter space in this regard.
The isotope shift, what is the connection with the electron scattering?
No, the connection with the electron scattering is that the theoretical prediction for the isotope shift depends on the charge radius, and the difference in the two charge radius. Mm-hmm. And this is not something you compute, but is an experimental input of your theoretical prediction. Okay. So what you need is an external way of measurement, and this is that, like, the traditional way was doing electron scattering experiments.
Okay. But then the argument is that this U power doesn't affect the measurement.
Yes, yes, okay. Yes.
And the statement that there's no bound from hydrogen for spin dependent, but if there is a bound from spin independent, is there a simple way to understand that?
No, but actually it's not even true.
There is spin dependent. And this I just wanted to ask. Because the best limit on spin dependent tension comes from mu on your mu p system, because there is no radius problem. So, but it's for spin dependent. My guess is for spin independent should be the same. But
I have also the one from closing problem.
Because it just it eliminates the most complicated problem, nuclear problem, which you can see the pure electronic system.
But
we can see that at mu e h.
Now I'm actually also talking about probing not like muon electron, but like nucleon electron. So these are different. Plus, I mean, we looked at positronium, and right now I'm looking at muonium and all of that. And many times, like the precision of the experiment is at the megahertz level. So if you think that at the end of the day, new physics is not something that like is not extremely sensitive to the system you are considering. Here I'm like probing physics at kilohertz level. In positronium I can probe it like a megahertz level. What can I do in positronium? I have a plot which I didn't put, but I can show it to you. I can get a better bound on the electron coupling than G minus 2, but only for massless, masses smaller than the inverse Bohr radius. So that is could be an interesting result, but then if the positronic bounds that like start to lose sensitivity very fast. So I feel that it's the idea that the finite size not having finite size help is certainly true, but I mean then you have to fight maybe also with less interesting of the community. The theoretical calculations are worse than the one Pakutsky is doing for helium. So But in any case, the easiest answer is also that this is like a different plane. So also, yeah, but actually, for instance, like Butker is looking at helium spectroscopy, like using these new results of Pakutsky, and I think that he gets better bounds. We can look at that offline. So I don't even totally agree that the best bound comes from.
Is the situation for protons different? Does the plane look very similar for y by p, or is it very different?
I mean, I have that photon. Okay, so this is epsilon, and this was like yem. So you have to. And also the dark photon. It's like this bounce if it was p minus l would be in this case like flat, but. So this is considering actually actual transitions, like an absolute frequency. And this is like what is the transition G minus 2, and considering helium spectroscopy, we can improve a factor of few, which is still not irrelevant, since, for instance, I mean, the new G minus 2 will be during the transition an improvement of factor of few. I mean, it's like something, I mean, these are not very fast evolving type of bounds. So. But certainly you see that here, let's see, you probe at best 10 to the minus 4. Here you get like 10 to the minus 14-ish. Then you have also 0.3 square. I mean, you do better with the isotope shift spectroscopy.
Can I ask what's happening at the bump?
This is like, it happens, you will see it everywhere, is that they are like cancellation, like in this intermediate region between like the nucleus and the charge, the Bohr radius, there are like, these bounds are computed taking the difference of the new physics, and there are like just cancellation in your numerical computation. But
with the ozone, like it's you see it all. So these are all when you have like heavy atoms, it happens in different places. Okay, can should I
go back to the chapel?
How you're measuring the child radius and not actually the measurement of mu, is that right?
Oh, at some, yeah, I mean, at some point, there is a hierarchy between them. And at the moment, the hierarchy is that the uncertainty related to the finite size, and then there is the experimental and theory which go hand to hand. For example, positron, actually, the experimental precision is the... not necessarily, I mean, it's not only a lack of interest, it's like system, I mean, not all the systems, not all the transition can be measured with the same type of precision. Okay. Maybe I occupied all the blackboard with like not so many words, but so now I have to cancel, like delete and switch to the clean observable part, which is the work with Victor. Okay, so once you go away from lithium, beryllium, all these guys, the theoretical computation is not anymore something. I mean, it's good compared to how difficult the problem it is. It's bad if you want to do something similar to what I was discussing. So on the other hand, the precision of the measurement is extremely good. I mean, these are the atomic clocks, and so it's worth considering what can we do with this like complicated system. And again, the starting point is like look at isotope shift. In a sense, you can understand that I'm looking at spin independence, so the most similar beast to QAD I can imagine of. The only way I can vaguely hope to kill it is to consider the contribution, which is not a leading order contribution for QAD, so isotope shift. Okay, so this is now many. And so now let's start to what is the theoretical prediction. More than theoretical prediction, I mean some sort of like what gives me the frequency shift. So again, I have my frequency I, my transition I, and two isotopes A prime. For instance, like you can imagine calcium, and then it's important like to consider like spinless nucleus, so I don't have like hyperfine splitting, and it simplifies what are the contribution to the isotope shift. So for instance, like calcium 40 and 42. But I mean, just to have a calcium plus, just to have a guide to think about. Okay, so what gives me the leading order contribution is like the mass shift. So this like the isotope shift is given by two contributions, the fact that they have different mass and the fact that they have different volume, plus the field shift. And this lambda at leading order is the difference in the charge radius, in the square of the charge radius. And what is important is that, again, a leading order, and it's like the each of these terms is factorized in an electronic part and a nuclear part. Okay, so this is something that is the leading order expression I can write down, and basically it's very hard to go from that, and it's even hard to compute these electronic factors. So what do people usually do to overcome this lack of information? They do what is called the King's plot. So now I will talk about what is the King's plot. Okay, and the King's plot is something that it turns out to be useful to do comparison electronic factors, try to extract nuclear parameters. It's a phenomenological tool. I mean, something that atomic physicists have been using for many years.
Can I ask you another question? So for those like systems with many electrons, even like QED, the theoretical calculations that may not be so good, right?
Yeah. No, yes, it's completely, I'm forgetting about them. I mean, okay. They are also bad because, I mean, Mariana Safranova, who's an expert, I feel like she reached an incredible level of precision compared to what it was the starting point. But it's not, I'm not discussing, like, what I discussed before is not a plausible route to take. Okay, so then, precisely because QED is not an easy and a good friend here, so what they do is say, okay, I have my transition, I write down that, let's make the answer. So that this is like, let's assume that I'm considering a precision such as this is a good way to write down my isotope shift. So assume that this is the way, at the level I'm considering, the word works. Then, let's consider another transition J for the same couple of isotopes, and this will be kappa J mu a prime plus fj lambda a prime. Now, this like is the difference in like this is like mu a prime is like 1 over ma minus 1 over n prime, and it's something that I measure very well, especially compared to the rest. So I can just like divide each of these quantities for mu a, and I go into the so-called reduced frequency shift. So maybe now let me just make these guys disappear. And I add the tilde, and everything with the tilde is just the quantity I'm considering divided by mu. So this is like lambda tilde, lambda tilde.
And before we get too far down, so what is the, you said these are all the leading, this is the parameterization leading effects, what are the sub-leading effects, what's the power counting?
I mean, this is, it's like really first order perturbation theory in like, I don't know, charge radius square over like Bohr radius.
So the effects are sort of
yes, like, and yeah, yeah. That, and that's the but yeah, I mean, there are, Victor wrote a paper where he's trying to estimate these, the second order correction to the field shift, to the mass shift, and typically it's varies system by system. And at some point, of course, you expect also this factorization to be broken. And so, but I'm assuming all of that
okay. Is,
yeah. Okay, so then, so now I have this like reduced frequency, and what people do is so, okay, so this guy, this charge radius difference, I want, like, I don't know it, let me solve this system and solve for lambda a prime, such as I get the reduced frequency J as a linear function. So I resolve here, then I define these factors. And then F I J is F J over Fi. And so then I have this beautiful linear relation. Oh, I forgot. There are like my isotope index. So what people say, okay, fantastic, I mean, linear relation. If now I have a system, and this happens frequently enough, where I have three pairs of isotopes, or total of four isotopes, and I can make three pairs of isotopes, I can make this King's plot. Is it clear so far? Okay. So I can make a King's plot. So I take nu tilde j, nu tilde I. I mean, and I plot this quantity for three points. And if this plot, these points falls into a straight line, it means that my ansatz was a correct one. I found so-called King's linearity. Then from that, I mean, they extract the, I always forget the name in English, abscis, ascisamina, the
Y and X.
And I mean, they do their comparison, they do whatever, like, it's useful for interstitials, all these keep things flat. But I mean, the idea is just, it's like an empirical way to verify an ansatz, which is supported by theory in a very early stage. Okay, so for instance, there are data. There are many, many data, but they are all in the same ballpark. For instance, for calcium plus, they measured like some transition to, not very relevant, I mean, to transition IJ, because of course this statement is also transition dependent, and they find that with a precision of 100 kHz, their points were beautifully going in a straight line. So this means that they verified that this simple expression was holding at 11 times to the minus 6, which means, I mean, all the other next to leading corrections somehow can be reabsorbed and have this like simple factorized form of.
And what's the value of charge radius over Bohr radius squared for calcium? I'm trying to assume that 10 minus 6 in this power counting is.
It's like.
Is awesome or not awesome?
It's like MeV, so like let's say 10 MeV over KV.
May I just have a comment? Why people did it? King's plot was invented on time, people could not calculate anything.
Right, it was a long time ago.
So they did it empirically. So King found it's a linear function, and all atomic calculation accuracy comes into this K and F. So if you have no accuracy at all, it's still a linear function. This is important. So on
it's still a linear function. It's still linear. But if I added extra terms that were higher order, then I would depart from linearity.
It's a tricky thing because this formula, R squared A minus R squared A prime, is actually incorrect. The relativistic effects kill this formula. But it does not matter. All you need is factorization of nuclear and atomic variables. The point is, but if it's not difference of radius squared, it's actually up the power to.
Yeah, it's that.
Okay, you're saying
all you need is factorization of atomic and electron variables, which is very good.
Okay.
The next point is very complicated to find corrections. But Clovity doesn't discuss it. It was discussed in our panel. This is really complicated. What are corrections to King's plot? What breaks the neutron linearity within standard model? It's a complicated problem. But simple. Think if you factorize atomic and nuclear variables, so you have linear functions. This is a key point. This is idea of the method.
Okay, but can I add on something? Indeed, first of all, like lambda SLT is not only in leading order, and it's true that like if you have a correction which is which breaks factorization, for sure you also break King's linearity. But it's not true that like you can still have factorized next to leading order contribution which breaks linearity. So it's not. I mean, it's just that, in a sense, the way otherwise all our paper would be wrong, because in physics it's still factorized. So the idea is that, like, it's for like the way of which was not very friendly to the atomic community. Like you can imagine to have like a three-dimensional vector space where it's like in the isotope space. So you can imagine to combine these in vectors where, for instance, you have mu j a1 a naught, mu j a2 a naught, mu j a3 a naught. And then, I mean, I don't know if like telling this way you will simplify it, but then, so then the King's linearity is basically saying that the vector with entry 1, 1, 1, which is basically the mass shift reduced, and this new j and new I, they are coplanar. So then, I mean, everything which is everything you add, any new vector, which can be new physics or a next to leading contribution, like will partially lie on this plane, and we'll have like what it will really break this relation will be the orthogonal, like the projection in the orthogonal direction. So in a sense, this dilute new physics and dilute also a lot the next to leading correction. Of course, if then you add something which is instead not factorized, you don't have any dilution factor, in effect.
And what is the natural size of the misalignment? I mean, if the suppression factor becomes vector partially aligned and partially transverse, what?
For new physics, it's like one order of, like, you suppress of one order of magnitude or something like that. But instead, we did our particle physics part of the collaboration in a very naive way, also some estimation wrongly, but it was like we were finding that instead, maybe second order field shift correction, they were more aligned. Because in a sense, like the idea, so when you have this plane, you add new physics. This is like a priori really not something that is aligned, neither with the field shift, neither with the mass shift. So you have a suppression, but it's not terrible. When you add this second order correction in these two directions, you actually pay a price of alignment a lot bigger, so it's estimated like two orders of magnitude, even three orders of magnitude of alignment. So then, as Victor was saying, what really kills you is something that breaks this factorization.
So I don't understand one thing. So which of the effect comes first?
What?
I mean, first you break the linearity, or first you break... Which effect breaks first? First, you break the coplanar thing, or you break first the formula that you brought?
But I mean, they are equivalent, no?
Not really, no.
What do you mean? Which formula?
I mean, it's non-trivial that these two vectors, that these two things lie on the same plane.
Yeah, and this you verified what... The missing point is that we always work under the ansatz is that this is what the experiment is telling us, so we don't predict it.
Okay.
So we say, so far, for let's say calcium plus. So far we know that three vectors are coplanar. Let's now add new physics, and we know, so let's compute the projection of new physics in the direction orthogonal to this plane. I know that, so this will be maybe I have to erase again, or maybe I can go there. Okay, so now I add, for instance, new physics, but in effect, the way to understand it is like new physics or next to leading order correction is the same.
Understand. I was simply asking, maybe it's the same thing that Natalia asked. So what is the power of, let's say, alpha and MP over ME that I should put to understand what the experimental result? So you said that like this coplanarity is true to one part to a million?
Yeah, but this is something that is like, because I don't find the linearity. non-linearity. It's not something that, I mean,
it's in agreement with the theoretical prediction.
No, actually, there was no theoretical prediction. I mean, until Victor wrote his paper, there was no theoretical prediction along this line.
I see, I see.
So even for the finish, I'll comment. Let's for a moment assume that there are no corrections. Correction is a very complicated issue, which I only say three words after. For example, nuclear polarizability makes familiarities. It's second order in photon exchange. Nuclear polarizability makes familiarity. QED and relativistic corrections still keeps it linear. Then second order effects in the isotopic shift makes familiarity. So there are sophisticated effects, but they strongly depend on the atom you consider. Because the electron wave function on the nucleus depends on the nuclear charge. So they strongly depend on atom you consider. The best case is, as I clearly showed, was ethereum, and there is also strontium. This was not shown. That non-linear corrections are, from standard model, are very small. So it's the best way to search for new physics in this system. And it was clearly shown in the plot, because it was logarithmic scale, and the ethereum was far better than any other system.
But I have this plot, it was like, because I didn't talk about how to construct new physics yet, so...
So let's skip complicated things and just get the idea which code they're trying to communicate with. Because new physics also violates non-linearity. So if you see anything non-linear, it's the signature of new physics.
As far as that, I would say, don't see linearity
per constraint. But there are standard model corrections, which should be estimated, otherwise you cannot claim on new physics.
But can't you have a cancellation between the new physics and the star evaluation?
Okay, good. I feel like there's something that I would say makes me confident that this is a good way to constrain physics is that we have so many systems, and as Victor was saying, the standard model correction, they depend tremendously on the atom, while the physics does not care. So the fact that, like, having several systems, I feel like gives you the control of the fact that there are no accidental cancellation. But okay, let's first, because new physics is a polarized term, so can still, thank God, break linearity. Okay, so let's go back to our, I don't know, even like the frequency. So it was like, lambda A prime plus I add new physics yn A minus A prime. And then I have the xi, which is the integral over like of the Lyukawa potential over the wave function. And here is an important point. Given that this is like very, very difficult to compute, so we compute it thanks to Victor and Julian Berengutter, who is another professor in the institution. It's really a mess. But okay, but this is in a sense. You just need the leading order precision, and it's fine. We can compute it and depend, of course, on M5.
It's a very easy problem. Okay, for our contribution, having the most powerful computer code in the world, it's a very easy problem.
Okay, yeah, for you a second.
It's a second. Yeah,
no.
Contribution of the
it's not, for us, it was, even the helium, which we did, it was not so trivial. Okay, where are we in my notes? Okay, so now if I redo the game as before, let's go to reduce frequency and trade the nuclear charge, blah, 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 I get this, which is like this. Aij plus Fij nu tilde I plus Yn, then it's like then I have A prime, and then I have Xj minus Xi Fij. I mean, this expression, the only reason why I brought it down, because it's important before we start even this game, to notice when, which are the lost cause. And actually the lost cause in this method, in the same way also when I was mentioning the immune combining different transition, is not sensitive to short-range interaction. The reason is the following, and you can see it very easily here. So let's look at this. So it's xj minus xi, and this fij is fj over fi. So when I have m phi a lot heavier than the nucleus, what happens is that my xi is proportional to the wave function at the origin. And this is true also for the nuclear interaction. So I have two delta D Dirac, and so xj and fj are proportional, so these cancel out. So no way that I can probe short-range interaction. In a sense, if here I was agnostic in how the physics was depending on the isotope, I could also envision if like my vector is aligned with the mass shift of the field shift, I will not break linearity, but the reasonable way to look at the new physics is this. So I can look at this effect. I can also hope to probe, I mean, new physics will also give a contribution in the short range, it would just be a very fastly dying type of contribution. And so if now I manipulate my expression and then solve the two six actual equations I have I want to eliminate also this Fij, I get what is like the, in a sense, the non-linear part, what really breaks King's linearity, which is like and that is the vector 1, and this is the vector in physics, which has as component A naught and A1. So this vectorial language has the advantages that it allows to write in a very, very concise, maybe it's too much, but in a concise way, these bounds. So this is like the like out of my new physics, what really breaks me non-linearity is this like form of like just in a sense is the component perpendicular to this like King's plane or whatever. So then how do I impose the bound? I say okay, I compute this. To compute this, in this case I need data, and I need also this X factors computed by Julian Berenguer. And then I say, okay, so now I define the nonlinearity in the data, which is just really the perpendicular direction of the plane. And I say, if I know that if linearity is found in the data, this is going to be smaller than the experimental prediction. So what I say now, I can constrain this combination of new physics to be less than the experimental prediction. So I'm not able to state new physics as it is and say, oh, my precision is like 1 hertz, new physics should be less than 1 hertz. But still, with manipulation and with some loss of power along the way, I can constrain new physics really to be less than experimental precision. This, of course, provided that I make my measurement, and the measurement gives me non-linearity. No, sorry, linearity. So, I mean, it's a, in a sense, a very data-driven approach. It's not, I mean, if you find it, you have the green light to constrain the physics. If you don't, in a sense, this will give you a contribution which will be larger than your precision.
Can I ask you a very stupid question? Just that I want to be sure that I understand the notation. So V1 and V2 It was not this light. These are the two vector in the isotope plane.
Yes.
For three in this plane, if you define
yes,
that.
Like mu one.
For two different lines.
For yes, for two different conditions. Yes.
Okay.
And what is this H?
An H, sorry. It's the new physics vector, meaning the, like A1, A0, A2, A0,
A3, A0. These are just the atomic numbers of...
Yeah, but because, I mean, it's like just it's the nuclear part of new physics, which is simply...
But then the cross product of that with one is almost zero, right? It's,
No, it's actually, I mean, no, it depends also how different is the numbers are.
You go to many electron systems and A is very large and the...
Yeah, I mean, you do lose something, but it's not
so wouldn't
like...
Wouldn't it be better to use that for...
Hmm?
Wouldn't it be better to use this method for systems with few electrons also?
But I mean, the problem is also that you have to have four stable or long-lived enough isotopes. But then you can, like, I mean, you could have some difference in the, you know, like, yeah, maybe you should not consider atoms too close in A, but, I mean, we estimated that, it's like, it's something that we take into account, but it's not, I mean, still maybe here is a good point to show the sensitivity.
Okay, so, this is the order of magnitude suppression, it's just...
Yes. Yeah, basically it's just that, yeah.
Because there are two suppressions here. Isotopic shift is small, at 10 to minus 9 of a frequency. And nonlinearity is even smaller. Why it goes so high addresses? Because if you understand that model, you have 15 orders of minute suppression of the corrections. This is why we hope to get into physics. Because there's double suppression of a standard model in physics. Isotopic shift is small, nonlinearity is many orders of minute smaller. So you go to a first level after frequency of 10 to 14 or 10 to 15.
Yeah, but I mean, these are actually, like, they were talking about new physics suppression. Like,
yeah, I just wanted to know about the alignment.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, in a sense, there is a suppression. If you want like that, naively one would say, oh, if you go to heavy atoms,
like we plot more. It's just plus point goes out of linear effect. Let's see.
Yeah, but what it goes
out with. Vectors are very good, but it's much easier to understand on the picture.
No, but I think at least they got it. It's just like the point, like, I think that it was not clear is that, of course, what I was saying is that you don't take in physics and you say it's less than that. It's a washed out in physics contribution. But so naively, one would say, oh, in A90s, fantastic physics, in physics is much bigger than helium? No, because I mean, you do isotope shift and you reduce because it's A minus A prime, but QED is 10 to the 15th, 10 to the 6th. And then you do this alignment and you pay another order a little bit more of money. Yeah, so it's.
So your isotope shift on Zirconium is 10 to the minus 15?
No, the 10 to the 15, 10 to the minus, sorry.
The relative uncertainty?
No, the relative uncertainty, no, because it's like, in a sense, the absolute error stays the same, but then the isotope shift is smaller, so it's...
I guess my question is, because you have the reduced thing, is there a big uncertainty in the masses?
No.
So that's much smaller than
yes,
the...
Yes, really? Yes, but it's like the... relative uncertainty here is 10 to the minus 9, 10 to the minus 6, because we're not talking about 10 to the 15 Hertz level. So the relative uncertainty is less, but it doesn't count so much for in physics.
Sorry, I'm confused. So this uncertainty in the frequency shift is how much?
10 to the minus, depends on if the precision is 1 Hertz and your isotope shift is like 10 to the 9, it's 10 to the minus 9.
You're saying your mass uncertainty is better than 10 to
yes.
the 9?
Yes.
Oh.
For, yeah.
So
best atomic clocks now reach accuracy 10 to the minus 18. So it's best
masses.
Ever accuracy achieved by humankind. So it's according to the Terbium clock.
Okay, I was just confused because I was just looking up the proton mass uncertainty in flight.
No, for that
nine.
Is much higher,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
For what?
atoms. It's a very good procedure.
Okay. The major point, you avoid uncertainties. When they make things float, you avoid uncertainties of the theory. The proton mass intensity doesn't count, so it's not important.
Yeah, but she was asking for something else. But yeah, for the like the electrons, in a sense, what I was starting off is like it's a worrisome uncertainty. We can look at the new data.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to relook at the actual numbers, but I didn't. So, but I know where to look at. I can show it. My computer always froze. Oh. Okay. So this is the bad. So this is not this is the worst. So with existing data, and this was this calcium plus I was mentioning with like 100 keywords, this is what you can get. And this is more or less the same plane. I mean, we decided here to do a product of YE. From G minus 2 and 1 and from the neutron scattering, but bottom line is the same. There are these imprecise probes, and this is with 100 kilohertz what you can do.
So
which
I
is.
I have to ask, what is G minus 2 supernova 1982?
This is really a weird thing we need, which I regret a lot. So we took the bound from like Y neutron from the supernova, and we multiplied by the Y bound. So it was an extremely non-kosher thing. But because we didn't have probes, we wanted to give an idea that is not the truth. It was actually not good for us, because we could have, so. Indeed, we did. If you see here, we didn't do it anymore.
Sorry, what is the physics? The physics is that if there's a coupling of the Ming free path you're too short, then neutrino will not escape or something?
This is like the bound from supernova. It's always like based on that, right? It's not. I mean, Sam is not here to.
So, no. At some point, they cannot interact too strongly, they cannot work again.
So then, I mean, this is what explains the bound.
For the same reason, maybe you should have put other bounds.
No, because like the other bounds, like for instance, beam dump, they depend on a further assumption. I mean, I like on this, what I wanted to plot here is indirect probe. Where?
Okay.
So this was in a sense it was meeting the.
Sorry, the assumption is that you're actually exchanging a particle of mass m phi.
Yes.
Or is it just a direct production of phi? Do you speed up, or how do you put it, constraint? Is it, you speed up the cooling, right?
The supernova.
Yeah. Emitting phi, okay.
Yeah, but, so everything which is like, does not actually, isn't all the bounds, but yeah, of course you have all the beam dump. Actually, I had a plot with that, but, okay, maybe I can show it looking on the paper.
So one question, if you have an electron-electron coupling or electron-proton coupling, those all don't
cancel out. Yes, they cancel out also. Yeah. So this is like a little bit the first suppression we pay, but it links also the problem. Okay, so with existing data, not so good. You can see this is the existing data for the King's plot. With existing data for light atoms, you can do much better. So these light atoms are not to be thrown away in the garbage. And but then, like, what was the reasoning? This method, provided that King's linearity is found, allows to use extremely precise systems, and in a sense, bounding physics with all the caveats I just discussed at the level of the experimental precision. So what we did is that we computed projection, taking into account the alignment in physics with mass shift, which was what we were discussing before, which is the only killing factor. So we can actually make projection. And you see, I mean, here, these are like all atomic clocks, Ytterbium plus and strontium, strontium plus, like with 1 Hertz level, which is totally feasible. And all these projections are actually not in, like, they are transitions and systems that they are currently like worked out in 5 different laboratories. So these are data that will come up. In the next year, we will know if any of these systems reach new region of parameter space. Actually, I had a version, which maybe I don't have anymore, where this technique can also rule out the beryllium interpretation of the spin. Then, we, at some point, we got excited. Then I think we became shy, and we took it out. But in the paper version, there is, because it's like a new protophobic in the paper of, right? Which couples with electrons and neutrons, and like here, I feel like the beryllium anomaly is sometimes here, and Ytterbium plus could rule it out.
I guess that doesn't have to be a Yukawa analysis.
No, no, the spin independent interpretation.
Can I ask you, so the limiting factor in your sensitivity is the background somehow, or like the, you know, or the precision of the experiment itself?
This is like, I can reply
so
to, I can reply twice. It's not a theory estimation in the sense that I don't care. I mean, for me, even if Victor would never estimate this, I would be happy enough, because at some point I will be having the results from the measurement, and this is really what I care of. Uh-huh. Then, of course, if there is no linearity and I want to, okay, so let's say this. Tomorrow I have the answer of all of these experiments and define the non-linearity in the same ballpark. This smell of new physics, because new physics will not change so much, so then I would be interested in Victor doing the experiment. But my sensitivity is limited by the experimental precision, but of, in terms of like aggressive projection. So if I now want to plot, you know, if it was feasible to imagine, I don't know, millihertz, I can do it. But then, of course, there is the elephant in the room, is that no one guarantees me that I will find the linearity.
Yeah,
but it's not, it's limiting factor, yes, but not in the, yeah, I don't know, it's limiting, but...
not for exclusion.
Yes.
There's some neutrino flow there, but it's not clear where it is.
Yeah.
But right now it's zero background.
And when they do these experiments, they do it for many different isotopes or for this atomic clock, right?
Yeah. So what? Yeah. They do it. I mean, this is the tricky part. Indeed, we were, like having 4 isotopes is not something that everyone, every system, it has some sort of a complication, but not like. By far, also like these things plot, they can be also used to do some nuclear physics. So there is a double use as like new physics and nuclear physics. But I mean, this is reasonable system, and I think there are even more that one can imagine.
Ytterbium has many stable rate of atoms. It's just like maximum number of stable isotopes. The difference of neutron numbers may be 14.
But they're doing the experiment, I mean, they're looking for this linearity. It's not atomic clock, just experiments. They're really looking for the linearity.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you need atomic clock, but atomic clock is basically atomic transition frequency. But we need to do measurements in several isotopes. Mm-hmm. Because now for atomic clocks, of course, we use only one. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a little bit of complication, but you need to do measurements for several isotopes. But there is no reason why accuracy should drop when you change your isotope. They're all available in nature. If they're unstable, it may be more problematic. But people now work with unstable isotopes. They're just very expensive. They need to be very simple.
But it is atomic clocks in a sense. I mean, all of this is possible because this is not an atomic clock, and we do the precision, like the bound is very bad.
I thought you were just using atomic clock. People are just trying to push the precision of atomic clocks for atomic clock's sake, but they're using atomic clocks to make this measure.
I mean, this is like if it's born before the chicken or the egg. In a sense, I mean, this is like if what like people are this is like an additional motivation or something that they have, like the atomic physics community has its own goal, but is happy to also do that. It's like in a sense a symbiotic to a program which has also other motivation.
Is this what happens? Okay, people make atomic clocks with some outstanding accuracy. So what? Now they need some challenging problem. The previous one was variation of fundamental constants. Of course, there was a kind of sport. Who is doing it better? First was some Germany, Paris, or NIST in America. They were a real sport competition. Yeah, but they need something to apply. So the now the sport was variation of fundamental constants. So they measure frequency over time compared to frequency of the clocks. Then now they have a new game. It's a measurement of isotopic shifts. Who will do it better? So we certainly will do it. I know for sure they do new experiments in the area. Because they need to apply. Because this 10 to minus 18 accuracy for GPS, no, of course, clocks are used for GPS. For GPS, clock accuracy 10 to minus 11, 12. Yeah, and it gives you some centimeters in there.
Yeah, you don't care anymore.
Yeah. But there are some very tall levels. Problem of kind of autopilot. They need fast, reliable clock because my understanding is that airplanes are still rendered manually. But to have fast autopilots, they need good clocks and so on. There are some technical applications, but they don't need accuracy to measure the same thing. This is why atomic physics people are very interested in new challenging problems, just to show that we are doing a useful job. Of course, what is very demanding is search for minerals or oil. Because the change in gravitational potential and redshift is also very small. Yeah. In this case, some oil which has low density, so gravitational potential is small, they can measure using clock. They need very precise clock. One of the applications is really high accuracy. All other applications are fundamental. Search for Lorentz invariance, search for variation is fundamental. Now, search for dark matter, it's a new topic, and this is measurements of isotopic shift.
All right, well, I think with that, let's thank Claudia again for a great talk.